Good morning. When my kids were growing up, they used to love to play act. And my favorite one was they liked to play restaurant. And they'd set up the playroom like a restaurant. They'd have the little tables, and they'd make up a menu of all the play food that we had. And they'd have a maitre d'. One of them would be the maitre d', one of them would be the waiter, and one would be the cook. And so they'd be all excited, and they'd have us come upstairs. And then we would sit, my wife and I'd sit at the table, and we would try to figure out what we're going to eat. And it was fun, a lot of fun, a happy memory. Another thing they used to enjoy was playing memorial service. They'd set up a table with little cups and the plates and something covering it, and they'd make up a little podium, and Caleb maybe do the exhortation that day, and they would be singing some hymns and pretending that they're at the memorial service. I loved all of it. The reason I loved it was not just because we were having fun with them enjoying acting like adults. They were projecting themselves as either working, being productive people, working in a restaurant, projecting themselves to be here at the memorial service, being a part of the body of Christ. If you can envision the future, it actually helps you to get to the future better. And I thought those were great things. So come to our theme verse. Our theme verse for today is 2 Timothy 4, verse 8. All right? 2 Timothy 4, verse 8. This is Paul talking at the end of his life, and he says something that I think is very nice. 2 Timothy 4, verse 8. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but to all them also that love his appearing. Love his appearing is what we're going to talk about today. Hebrews is also good, where it talks about those who look for Christ when he appears a second time. The idea is to think about things in the future before they happen in a positive light, transmitting yourself to this situation. Like kids playing, role-playing, how would it feel to be there at that time? Now, Bible school, some years back, something really impactful happened to me. It was a brother who wasn't really an impactful speaker, but what he said really was. And what he said was that the way when the resurrection or when Jesus comes back, and whoever or however you're called to go to the judgment or to meet Christ, how you react to that situation has a huge effect on how things will go. And I thought about that a long time. What if an angel or somebody shows up and says, it's time to go? You know, what am I going to say? Well, I'm in the middle of doing something really neat on my computer, planning something, or maybe, you know, am I going to be ready to go or not? And I thought about it, and I wasn't sure. I was not so sure. I'd get distracted. I'm not going to be taken away for anything. And I've thought about that for a long time. And he used a proof of that. And I'll give you the proof that I thought was his best proof. It's Luke 14. So come with me to Luke 14. And it's a parable of a man who made a big supper. And he's going to invite people to come to the supper. And I think of this as the marriage supper of the Lamb, you know, when Jesus comes back. That's how I look at it anyway. And he sends people to the supper. In verse 16, it starts, and he invites people. And the servants go out and get the people, you know, whether they're angels or however, he's going to gather people. And what happened is this. The first said unto him, I have bought a piece of ground, and I must needs go and see it. Let me be excused. The other just bought a 5 yoke of oxen. That'd be like me buying a brand new Plymouth or something. I want to go and ride. I want to drive my new car. I pray, have me excused. Another, I've married a wife. I cannot come. You know what? It didn't work out too hot for these people. You know what? They didn't get to go to the wedding ceremony. So having this reluctance, this brother pointed out, this reluctance is not good. Don't be reluctant to go, because essentially if you're reluctant, you'll go find someone else who'll go for you. And they did find plenty of people who would want to go to that marriage ceremony with the Lamb. So the point was made, and I thought about this so many times. You know what? I have played this role over and over again, and I tell you, if someone shows up, even now, says it's time to go, I'm going. I'm going. You'll be a blur. Because I planned it already. I know exactly what I'm going to do, and I'm going to do that. It's great. I highly recommend this because it helps you love his appearing when you already play the role. But here's the point of this exhortation. There's an area that I am really unhappy about. And that's about the judgment. You know, when I think about the judgment, I think about walking up some staircase or something, some kind of big judgment hall, walking a big room, and there's Jesus. And I think about what that's going to be like. I get sweaty. I get nervous. I get agitated. I feel dread. You know, walking into the final judgment. The word judgment, period, sends shivers down my spine. I think it's kind of like for many people, they talk about people who almost died of something, a near-death experience, and they say their life flashed in front of them, and they thought about all the things in their life that they did, usually the wrong ones that they did. And you think, oh, man, if I hadn't only not done that, oh, I said that to that person. Oh, I wish I didn't say that to that person. And you know what? When you go that route, you think this is going to be a good time at the judgment? No, you're setting yourself up to be just have the worst day of your life. And you know what? And my dreams about this in the past is always a long wait. So you've got a big line of, I always have a long line of people, and I'm always at the last. And so you see someone go up, and then they go off somewhere, and the next person, and while you're waiting in line, the dread just fills me up. And I'm not happy about that, because I don't think that's the way it's supposed to be. And you know what? We have role-played exactly the wrong thing, not to get the right outcome. So here's my big point for the exhortation, and this is it. The judgment seat of Christ is all about him, the Christ, and not about you. The judgment seat of Christ is not about you. It's about Christ. And what I mean is this. If you're thinking about how well you did, think about, did I do better here, worse than here? Really, judgment, there's no need for judgment. We all blew it as far as being perfect. You didn't do that well. You don't need to go to Christ at the judgment to find that out. But it's about what Christ did and all about him and about how he makes our hope come alive, then you've got something. And if you approach, I believe that the judgment will reveal these two things. The first thing I think it will reveal is, do you really believe God is great enough to forgive you? Do you really believe that God is great enough that he will forgive all those, I shouldn't have done that? And do you really believe, so second one, do you really believe that Christ's work was good enough, that he was successful enough that you could be in the kingdom? And what's the key verse? The verse was quoted last Sunday, actually, John 3:16. So often quoted that we forget about it. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. You see, we're a faith-based religion. Faith is our goal. What do you think the judgment would be judging? I believe it's going to judge our faith. Do you really believe that Jesus accomplished all that for you? Do you really believe in the Son? What about all the rules and regulations and commandments? Certainly they play in the judgment. And my suggestion is, yes, they do. They judge you in this way. Those laws and commandments were meant to build your faith up, to bring you to the judgment and realize that where you did well and where you showed what faith you did have and where you failed, that you weren't good enough. The end point is, what was your faith like? And those judgments will be on your faith, I believe. Now, the proof of this, I'd like you to go to Luke 18. Luke 18, and this is a pre-judgment. We get a preview of what I believe the judgment will be like. Luke 18, verse 9. And it starts like this. Chapter 18, verse 9. And he spake this parable unto certain who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. So he's going to tell us, what is righteous? How do you decide that? What criteria is the judgment all about? And this is how he answers what's righteous and what isn't. And it was two men went up into the temple to pray, one a Pharisee, one a publican. And the Pharisee stood and prayed with himself thus, with himself, God, I thank thee that I'm not as other men are, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this publican. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I possess. And the publican, standing afar off, would not lift up so much as his eyes unto heaven, but smote upon his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. What's the point? The point is, what's the judgment? What's righteousness about? Is it about you, like the publican? What did I do? What didn't I do? How well do I measure up to my friends around me? Or is it about what Christ did? What he wouldn't even look at. Look, he was looking past himself and looking to what? To God. The only person who will give you mercy is God. It's based on faith. And who is confident that Christ can give you salvation despite your faults? And I believe that this is what the judgment is going to be about. Who shows up thinking about themselves? If you're all filled with angst about what I did and what I didn't do, shame, fear, in a sense, negates the work of Jesus and what he did for us. But if we can look at Jesus, he's the focus, not what we did and didn't do. He's the one. He's the point of the judgment. And we're full of gratitude and admiration. Then I believe that that's what would be a good day for us, of our best day of our life. So I'd like to end with my vision of what I think, what I'm going to be thinking about when I get to the judgment. Because I've told you, I plan ahead. I play act this out. And when I'm walking up, and however it is, where you're standing in line, or you're some kind of room or throne or something that you have to go to, know who I'm going to look for. I'm going to be looking at Jesus, and I'm going to see that he is beautiful. That Jesus there, standing there, always wanted me to be in his kingdom. It was his passion that I could be in, would be in his kingdom. And all my life, every time I messed up and said that horrible thing and did that bad stuff, that he was forgiving me faster than I could get the words out of my mouth. And he's worthy of all my admiration. And you know what? A lot of times we have Jesus standing in front of us, not me. At the judgment, Jesus is standing beside me. Because Jesus is the reason I'm there. And Jesus is the one that made it happen. He's on my side. He's not me versus him. He's with me. He wanted me to be in that kingdom. He craves me to be in that kingdom. And he's with me. And he's my rock. And without him, nothing would have happened. So I don't have any dread. In my mind, I'm not going to be afraid, not going to be dread this situation, because I believe that he was successful and can forgive me and did forgive me, and that God is wants me there. It's all about Christ. He's the author and finisher of our faith. So I'd ask you to add these thoughts to our breaking of bread this morning, and then your thoughts about the future.